This, dear students, is the story of John Gutfreund. I'll say good friend because it's hard to say the German word Gutfreund, and John Merriweather. On slide 48, we ask the question, are you going to be an investor or are you going to be a speculator? And it's a very important question because trying to be a speculator, a trader, as they are often called, T-R-A-D-E-R, not traitor, but trader, is very, very difficult. Maybe you took this class thinking you were going to learn how to buy and sell stocks all day long, be a day trader or whatever. And I hope that very quickly you're going to realize that that's not what I'm hoping you'll be. It's certainly not how I invest, and I don't know anybody who can do it successfully over the long term. But if you do decide that this is what you want to do, this you're going to be a trader, realize that you're up against the best in the world. And this person, John Merriweather, was acknowledged to be the king of the bond traders in the 1980s. So I'm going to read, and I'll bounce around a little bit. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's from a book called Wall Street People that is on the website, the link to, well, it's in the books to read. And it's a really good book. It's got lots of good stories about people in the business. It was sometime early in 1986, the first year of the decline of my firm, Salomon Brothers. Our chairman, John Gutfreund, left his desk at the head of the trading floor and went for a walk. At any given moment on the trading floor, billions of dollars were being risked by bond traders. Gutfreund took the pulse of the place by simply wandering around it and asking questions of the traders. An eerie sixth sense guided him to wherever a crisis was unfolding. Gutfreund seemed able to smell money being lost. He was the last person a nerve-wracked trader wanted to see. He liked to sneak up from behind you and surprise you. This was fun for him, but not for you. Busy on two phones at once trying to stem disaster, you had no time to turn and look. You didn't need to. You felt him. The area around you began to convulse like an epileptic ward. People were pretending to be frantically busy and at the same time staring intently at a spot directly above your head. You felt a chill in your bones that I imagine belongs to the same class of intelligence as the nervous twitch of a small furry animal at the silent approach of a grizzly bear. An alarm bell shrieked in your head. Gutfreund, Gutfreund, Gutfreund. So you see, this guy he wasn't actually a trader. He was the boss of the traders. However, this day, he did something strange. Instead of terrifying all of us, he walked a straight line to the trading desk of John Merriweather, Salomon Brothers' finest bond trader. He whispered a few words. The traders in the vicinity eavesdropped. What Gutfreund said has become a legend at Salomon Brothers and a visceral part of its corporate identity. He said, one hand, $1 million, no tears. One hand, $1 million, no tears. Merriweather grabbed the meaning instantly. The King of Wall Street, as Business Week had dubbed Gutfreund, wanted to play a single hand of a game called Liar's Poker for $1 million. He played the game most afternoons with Merriweather and the six young bond traders who worked for Merriweather and was usually skinned alive. Some traders said Gutfreund was heavily outmatched. Others, who couldn't imagine him as anything but omnipotent, and there were many, said that losing suited his purpose, though exactly what that might be was a mystery. The peculiar feature of Gutfreund's challenge this time was the size of the stake. Normally, the bets didn't exceed a few hundred dollars. $1 million was unheard of. The final two words of his challenge, no tears, meant that the loser was expected to suffer a great deal of pain, but wasn't entitled to whine, bitch, or moan about it. He'd just have to hunker down and keep his poverty to himself. But why? Why, you might ask, if it were anyone other than the King of Wall Street, why do it in the first place? Why, in particular, challenge Meriwether instead of some lesser traitor? It seemed an act of sheer lunacy. Meriwether was the king of liar's poker, the champion of the Solomon Brothers trading floor. The whole situation needs putting into context. John Meriwether had, in the course of his career, made millions of dollars for Solomon Brothers. He had the ability, rare among people and treasured by traders, to hide his state of mind. Most traders divulge whether they are making or losing money by the way they speak or move. They are either overly easy or overly tense. With Meriwether, you could never, ever tell. He had wore the same blank, half-tense expression when he won as when he lost. He had, I think, a profound ability to control the two emotions that commonly destroy traders, fear and greed. And it made him as noble a man who pursues his self-interest so fiercely can be. He was thought by many within Solomon to be the best bond trader on Wall Street. He's the best businessman in the place, the best risk taker I've ever seen, and a very dangerous liar's poker player. Now, what is liar's poker? Well, it's a game somewhat along the spirit of the game I Doubt It, if some people have played that game. Each player attempts to fool the others about the serial numbers printed on the face of a dollar bill that he holds close to his chest. So you take out a dollar bill, you look at it, and you look at the serial number. Now there's 40 numbers on that serial number, but everybody else has their own dollar bills. One trader begins by making a bid. He says three sixes. That means, all told, the serial numbers of the dollar bills held by every player, including himself, contain at least three sixes. Once the first bid has been made, the game moves clockwise in a circle. Let's say the first bid is three sixes. The player to the left can do one of two things. He can bid higher, same quantity of the higher number, or so you can say three sevens, or four sixes, or four fours, because that would be more than three. Or he can challenge, like saying, I doubt it, or I don't believe you, or there's another way of saying it. But anyway, you just say, hey, you know, there's no way that there are five sixes. The bidding escalates until all the players agree to challenge a single player's bid. Then and only then do the players reveal their serial numbers and determine who is bluffing whom. In the midst of all this, the mind of a good player spins with probabilities. The statistical likelihood of there being three sixes within a batch of, say, 40 randomly number-generated serial numbers. For a great player, however, the math is the easy part of the game. The hard part is reading the faces of the other players. The complexity arrives when all the players know how to bluff and double bluff. The game has some of the feel of trading, just as jousting has some of the feel of war. The question a liar's poker player asks himself are, up to a point, the same questions a bond trader or any trader asks himself. Is this a smart risk? Do I feel lucky? How cunning is my opponent? Does he have any idea what he's doing? And if he does not, how do I exploit his ignorance? If he bids high, is he bluffing or does he actually have a strong hand? Is he trying to induce me to make a foolish bid? Or does he actually have four of a kind himself? Each player seeks weaknesses, predictabilities, and patterns in the others and seeks to avoid it himself. The bond traders of all the firms on Wall Street played some form of liar's poker, but the place where the stakes run highest, thanks to John Meriwether, is the New York bond trading floor of Solomon Brothers. The code of the liar's poker player was something like the code of the gunslinger. It required a trader to accept all challenges. Because of the code, which was his code, John Merriweather felt obliged to play. But he knew it was stupid. For him, there was no upside. If he won, he upset his boss, the king of Wall Street. No good came of this. But if he lost, he was out of pocket $1 million. This was worse than upsetting the boss. Although Merriweather was by far the better player of the game, in a single hand, anything could happen. Luck could very well determine the outcome. Merriweather spent his entire day avoiding dumb bets, and he wasn't about to accept this one. "No, John," he said. "If we're going to play for those kind of numbers, I'd rather play for real money. $10 million, one hand, no tears."
$10 million!
It was a moment for all the players to savor. Merriweather was playing liar's poker before the game even started. He was bluffing, of course. He did not have $10 million. Goodfreund considered the counterproposal. It would have been just like him to accept. Merely to entertain the thought was a luxury that must have pleased him well. He had the $10 million. It was good to be rich. On the other hand, $10 million was and is still a lot of money. If Goodfreund lost, he'd only have $30 million or so left. His wife Susan was busy spending the better part of $15 million redecorating their Manhattan apartment. Merriweather knew this. And as Goodfreund was the boss, he clearly wasn't bound by the Merriweather code. Who knows? Maybe he didn't even know about the code. Maybe the whole point of his challenge was to judge Merriweather's response. Even Goodfreund had to marvel at the king of liar's poker in action. So Goodfreund declined. In fact, he smiled his own brand of forced smile and said, "You're crazy." "No," thought John Merriweather and all the other bond traders on the Solomon Brothers bond trading floor, "just very, very good." So, do you understand? Are you ready to go up against the John Merriweathers of the world? Do you understand why I say I certainly hope you don't try to become a trader, a speculator, and that you invest prudently and for the long term? And if you do, then I can help you. If you want to be a trader, I don't think I can help you. All I can do is wish you a whole lot of luck. See ya.